We kick it off this afternoon by welcoming back to the program. Well, we've said it before, one of our absolute favorites on the show. Had to get him on one last time before we transition into our new reality, whatever the heck that may be. David Roth of Defector with us. David, welcome.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Fantastic. Nice to have you back.
It's good to be back. I'm, you know, a little emotional about the end of this particular chapter for it, but I'm glad I could get back for episode 3301.
It may, which might be the best one yet, I think.
Yeah, I've only been on like maybe 600 or 700 of those. So I don't want to make it seem like I've done more than I, you know, actually have.
Well, you've done a lot of heavy lifting for us through the years, but yeah, we're going to do a podcast. We know that. We've had a bunch of sponsors who are going to follow us into podcast land. So we'll do that on a weekly thing. And another possibility or two that not I don't want to say too much about yet until we have a better idea. But there could be some rate, but it won't be daily. But that was probably coming anyway, because, man, I'm too old and tired to do this every day. This turns out this takes a little bit of work, more than I thought.
This has been something that I've always been impressed by with you and with Carrie as well, that like the people that I know that get on the radio every day and talk, and I don't know them personally, but I'm thinking about the people that have been doing it in the greater New York City media market during my life here, are insane. They're not people that, like, it's Mike Francesa. It's people that can just sit there for 5 hours and complain about, like, poor service at a restaurant or the Yankees not signing Juan Soto, and they don't get self-conscious about it. You guys seem like very normal people to me from our 600 or 700 conversations that we've had in public over the last few years. Like, I don't know how you do it. I feel like, podcast is a good, normal cadence for talking to people. Multiple hours every day feels like a real workout.
Yeah. Although, again, I'm not being, it's not false modesty here, but I've said from the start, the show's always been, it's about the guests, and my job has always been just to tee them up and let the far more talented people do their thing, and I get out of the way.
Well, that's very modest of you. It's not entirely false modesty, but it is extremely modest. You're very kind to do it, and I don't know. I mean, whatever. This is, if there is a time to blow smoke but this would be.
Woo.
I'm getting it in right under the
wall.
I think it's really cool that this happened on the radio as well. I think that's important, and I hope that you can find a way to do that too. I just feel like we had this experience. You know, I was in Maine just last week, Southern Maine, for, you know, Christmas and stuff, and it's still possible to happen upon a radio station where something is going on that you didn't expect to find. And I think that's, you know, those sorts of surprises are fewer and further between than I would like in American life. Like, I think it's cool that this is just somewhere where anybody could hear it.
And I'm old enough in radio, and Rich is too, that when I first started out, automation wasn't a thing. So I had to sit through a lot of those angry, yelling people. And I always dreaded it. And when I had a chance to be one of the guys talking, because before I got the opportunity to work with Rich, I did a couple other shows with a guy, Ernie Clark, and Dan Hannigan, who approached it in a different way as well. So when I finally got a chance to talk, I absolutely avoided any of that yelling stuff. It wasn't me, and I wasn't going to fake it, which, let's be honest, a lot of them are faking it.
Yeah, I never understood the appeal of it necessarily. I know that it's like, you know, it's maybe something that people are listening to when they're in a car, and when you're in a car, you're not your best self. And so maybe they just wanted to sort of hear their inner monologue refracted through, in my case, the voice of a guy with the worst Long Island accent ever recorded. But I don't understand, like, how that makes you feel any better. You know, like, you come out the other side of it, you know, it's 45 minutes to drive, whatever, 18 miles home. You get out of the car, you have a bunch of new bad opinions in your head, all of which were delivered in, like, the Bagel Boss guy voice. Like, is that good? Like, I don't know. I feel like the idea of having, like, a, you know, overhearing a conversation between normal people who are interested in each other seems far more relaxing to me. But I can't argue with Mike Francesa's success.
No, oh no, not at all. But I look at this and think, I've been the luckiest person in the world, because I've spent 13 and a half years talking to a whole bunch of people, and Carrie's had this experience too, talking to people who are heroes, talking to people whose work I respect and admire, and then discovering this whole world of really talented, awesomely talented, funny, smart, insightful people like you that I now count as friends, even though we've never met in person, mm-hmm. and to get to pick their brain and talk to them on a regular basis. And, I didn't get rich on it, but I'd have done it almost for free because it's just been so much fun.
That's awesome to hear. I mean, I think that's you can tell that is true, I think, from the work product.
Rich is a little more magnanimous than I am. I wouldn't have done it for free, but I still really enjoyed it.
Rich doesn't really like going to restaurants as much as I do. I'm not doing anything for free. I'm trying to get fries for the table. I respect both points of view. But this is true, I think, for anything that, you know, that you read or listen to. There's a light that, you know, when it goes out, it stays out. That there's like a lot of people still kind of punching the clock, writing sports columns and stuff. And they just clearly don't care about sports anymore. And it's hard, you know, it's not an easy country to live in. You can't just walk away from a job when you don't want to do it anymore. Like if that were true, all of us would have had probably a lot more jobs than we've had in our lives. But I think when it stays lit, when you can tell that somebody still cares about the work that they're doing, it's impossible to miss and really special and really valuable. And, you know, there's not a lot of places that I go and talk to, the same person, you know, every couple months, however many months are usually between appearances here. And I don't feel like I have to, you know, for better or worse, I don't feel like I have to talk differently than I would talk if we were having a beer. Like, it's just, you guys are people that I've talked to a lot and people that I also consider friends, and maybe I could clean up my verbal junk or whatever more if I were trying to like perform for the listeners, but it's just a phone call with somebody that I care about.
Well, that's why I'm excited about the podcast too, because man, the F-bombs will reign supreme.
Yeah, I did have the experience once where when Rich was doing his own, sometimes, you know, Carrie will call and be like, oh, we're in the open, we don't do it. For a while, Carrie, when you were in New Orleans, Rich was doing that himself, and it would be, like, he would call, and I got to hear, Rich say a couple of curse words, like, not on the radio, and it was, like, you know, not shocking. I've heard them before, but it was weird. It was like, you know, like the way you used to have to pay to see Johnny Carson working blue in Las Vegas.
Yes. Yes.
Dynamic.
Exactly like that.
Yeah. I got pretty used to it during the commercial breaks, to be honest.
The idea of just a completely different person emerging during that. I had a friend that was a engineer for, different sports and politics radio guys before he, you know, moved to New Orleans, went to law school, had a family, like just got out of that space entirely. But he, I remember him talking once about engineering for Skip Bayless, who was subbing for one of his regular guys. And he was so scandalized afterwards. I remember meeting him later that night, and he was like, he just never stops being like that. He's like, even during the commercial, he was yelling about Ohio State and the Luckeyes. And like, it just sounded exactly the same. Like the whole show could have been just like nonstop. But the idea of there being like a Naomi Campbell cell phone throwing version of Rich that emerges only during the ad.
I want it to be like that, you know, the old legendary in radio, Casey Kasem outtakes of him screaming because they ran, was an up-tempo song right before a very sad long-distance dedication.
Yeah.
The dog named, like, Snuffle.
Yes,
whatever, yeah. Where he was one of the all-time... Yeah, that was, like... I don't know that it qualifies as being, like, an iconic record to me, but I remember that the record store that I liked, the indie record store I liked when I was in college, always, always, always had celebrities at their worst CD displayed, which was, like, I think where I discovered that. But it was, like, whatever other new releases there were, that was, like, the permanent center square. They're just, like, we couldn't recommend this more highly. Like, if you want to hear Casey Kasem get mad, this is the CD for you.
It's fantastic. David Roth with us on Downtown. How was your visit to Maine? I know we had some we had some snow on the ground. Did that mean that you weren't able to participate in searching for things with a metal detector?
I got to hear a lot of people searching for metal detectors. Nice. My father-in-law was heavy duty on that. That's basically what he has now instead of television. Like, they cancel cable. Like, he just watches YouTube on his phone. And for the most part, it's not bad. But it is the sort of thing where he's older. He does not like to wear his hearing aids. And he's going to watch whatever he wants to watch, whether my wife and I are trying to read or work or have a conversation nearby. And the metal detecting stuff is that. And then there's a lot of guys that do just, like, small engine repair, which, again, it's pretty wholesome. You can find a lot worse stuff on YouTube. But the sound of just, like, grinding gears and then some guy being like, oh, no, it's just not very conducive to relaxing to me. But it was nice. It was extremely cold for most of the visit, which I didn't mind. We got our shopping done in Portland and felt like heroes for, you know, being outside, scurrying about, buying chocolates for each other. And then we spent like 3 days inside feeding a wood stove and playing cards. And that was terrific. So overall, no real complaints. I did have to drive back, which always sucks, but it is it was worth doing. I was able to bring back some stuff that I would not have wanted to try to explain to TSA.
All right, I have to ask you about the Mets and Juan Soto. Man, Steve Cohen's not messing around.
He's not. I mean, he's a real creep. And his money shouldn't exist. And yet at the same time, like, if he's going to continue to spend it on my favorite baseball team, I'm going to give him a pass on being a prolific financial criminal. He's at least doing the right things with it. The Soto deal to me is, I think my instinct, as not just as a Mets fan, but I think just given what my personality is like, you know, I was very happy and then instantly went into sort of a forensic examination of reasons why I might be wrong to be happy about it. And it's kind of harder to come up with reasons to feel bad about it than I had expected it to be. This told me that I was, like, okay to feel happy for, you know, another few days about it, which I have allowed myself to do. It's just, you know, for one thing, it's not my money. For another thing, you know, the market resets and resets and resets. And while there's not a new Juan Soto every offseason, you know, someone's going to pay Kyle Tucker some, you know, previously record-setting amount of money in the next offseason to come. And that's, like, how it works. And then the other bit is that, I mean, with Soto, this was the part that I found the most fun, and I'm dining out on the observation of a friend of mine who writes for Baseball Prospectus and follows this and knows more about it than me, that basically through the age of 25, all the comparisons, like the players that have had, you know, comparable first, you know, 5-6 seasons of their career, all of the ones that are comparable to Juan Soto are like guys that played around World War II earlier. Mm. And so there's never, I mean, it's one thing that it's ridiculous to compare anybody to be like, oh yeah, he's kind of a Jimmy Fox, Stan Musial type. Like, that's not a type, you know, like that's right. A man on a plaque in Cooperstown. They only made one. And then the other bit is that none of those guys played with contemporary conditioning or training or an understanding of, like, how to rehab injuries and stuff. And so while it's ridiculous to think that anybody that signs a 15-year contract is going to be good in all 15 years of it, I think there's a better chance that Soto is a useful player for longer than, you know, any of the sort of projections that I've seen have been able to compute. There's nothing to compare it to.
Right.
So
I'm sort of in no man's land when it comes to the NFL. I grew up a Giants fan, but, you know, even I could only take so much. So I've lost some interest in recent years, and I'm in Patriots country and I watch the games, but I'm not really a Patriots fan. So I don't have a dog in the hunt, but I will say this. I think it's some of the worst NFL football I can remember seeing this year. There is so much mediocrity in pro football right now.
Yeah, awful. The 1 o'clock slate every week the last
month, dogs,
has been a disaster. And that's especially tough when you, whatever, drove 6.5 hours the day before, you're planning on spending your Sunday being mildly high and cleaning your turtle tank. I couldn't even have the Jets on in the background. Like, honestly, I wanted to look for metal detecting videos.
Yeah.
It was the most assaultive football experience. I mean, the Giants played better than they have all year in the Colts, and that was still, it's like, I don't want to watch Drew Lock throw for four touchdowns, period. Like, it's nice that it happened for him, you know, and I guess for the Giants, I don't know. I mean, it probably handed the Patriots the number one overall pick, so I guess it's nice for everybody. But, yeah, there's a lot of the bad football is very bad. I do think once the playoffs start, it will be fun. The good teams are really good. There's a bunch of teams with really interesting kind of narratives and trajectories. And the Chiefs, for better or worse, I mean, I've enjoyed watching them in the past, have really, like, settled in as a pretty appealing heel.
Yeah, so
the dynamics are all there. We just need to get rid of, like, three-quarters of the games played every week before any of it gets good.
Yeah, and maybe start with the Saints games. It's been interesting living in New Orleans for the first full football season. The hope of the preseason and the happiness after the first two games just turning into what it turned into. And, oh, Saints fan would have been so happy with mediocrity this year.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. I have one of my good friends, my friend who I was talking about, who moved, he grew up down there and moved back and is a Saints fan, is a season ticket holder. And, like, I think that being happy with mediocrity is, like, it's not where you want to be as a fan. But I think if you've cheered for the Saints for a long time, you've seen things so much worse than mediocrity that, like, even Derek Carr seems fine. But then they got, whatever it was, 8 or 9 games with Derek Carr this year, and then the rest of it has been the Spencer Rattler show or, you know, I mean, it's just, like, it's not great. I do like that the Saints head coach now is a guy that's from my part of New Jersey, and it just seems like that's a really interesting cultural fit there. It's like, Darren Rizzi had coached at Bergen Catholic, which was one of the big football powerhouses in the county in New Jersey where I grew up. And it is not, I wouldn't have thought of him as being the first, or that type of guy as being the first sort of fit to be an NFL coach in SEC country. But he seems like he's at the very least, you know, managed to maintain a good attitude. The players seem to like him. The team is terrible, but everybody was like, yeah, they're the Saints. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, there hasn't been a lot of fans expressing unhappiness with him. Sort of, he got thrust into a position that was destroyed already, and he's done the best he could with what he had given the situation. So it'll be interesting. I'm not sure if he's going to be back or not.
Yeah. So did you find yourself kind of like adopting the Saints when you were down there? I know it's like probably tempting because it is, you know, you got an NFL team right there in your city. But
you really have to. I mean, if you're going to live in New Orleans, you really have to be at least a passing Saints fan. I mean, I have my Deuce McAllister jersey that I bought years ago. a great story. I brought it at the wrap sale for the Treme TV show when it was done. I got it I got an official NFL jersey for $10. They were selling the Saints jerseys for $10, and all the other teams were $5. So I got my Saints jersey for $10. I still have it, still wear it.
That's fantastic. That's a lot of credibility too. That's like if you could somehow certify that Steve Zahn had worn it during the show, I'd be more impressed. But I don't know how I could be more impressed.
That's by the way, he referred to as friend of downtown Steve Zahn.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You've had him on?
It was one of the cooler things that happened. We've had Jonathan Scheck, who played Jimmy Mattingly. He's been on a bunch with us, and he sent me an email. This must be 2 or 3 years ago, that he and Zahn and Tom Everett Scott were driving together up to Erie, Pennsylvania, Erie, PA, to throw out the first pitch at a minor league game as the Wonders. And he said, I thought it would be cool if we called you from the car. And so all three of the Wonders together, three of the four, called us and checked in from the road to Erie.
That's fantastic. I honestly, Jonathan Scheck is like either he's a New Orleans guy or he lives down there now or he makes a lot of movies there. I've seen stuff with him in it.
Yeah.
That was shot there. That's cool though. That thing you do is a classic to me. I'm glad that all of those guys are turned out to be good enough dudes to get the downtown seal of approval.
Absolutely, they're great. All right, I have to ask you about this because we know that in about 3 weeks or so it all goes to hell in a handbasket. If it hasn't already. But is it wrong that I'm still taking a great joy in watching this Musk Ramaswamy versus MAGA feud?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with enjoying people that you find distasteful being unhappy and unpleasant to each other. I think that's nice. What could be more human than enjoying watching people be rude to Vivek? I think it's an unfortunate sort of situation that basically those guys are, you know, and all those like different factions. I mean, for people that are not brain poisoned on this stuff in the way that you and I are, this is basically the, you know, the tech fash, right, that is in there proposing, you know, to eliminate all federal programs except for the ones that allow tech fash guys to hide their money or whatever. That those guys are basically arguing online all the time with actual like MAGA types who are you know, just sort of being confronted with the possibility of, you know, not getting what it was that they thought they were going to get for whatever reason during this endless process of projecting onto Donald Trump whatever it is that you think you actually want to see happen. And so it's a, you know, the worst people in Silicon Valley arguing with the most insane people in swing state diners online 24/7 all the time. You know, it's not 100% what you want. Like, ideally, all of those people would be much quieter and we'd have no way of knowing what they think. But as far as it goes, at least knowing that they're all stressed out and that Elon is like really mad and getting into Twitter spaces and cursing everybody out under an assumed name, all of that stuff is, I'd rather that than imagining him being happy.
Yeah. And them coming to the realization that so many have over the years that, you know, whatever you give Donald Trump money for, you're probably not going to get.
Right. I don't even, this is the bit that, you know, I wrote a little bit about it and then I decided I needed to kind of keep my powder dry. And also, you know, it just made me feel insane. He was already president. That happened like not even that long ago. Like, we were all around for it.
Yeah.
We talked on the radio during it. The idea that somehow all of that just got Men in Black brain wiped out of the shared cultural memory of this country to the point where he comes back running to be elected again. And everybody's like, well, you don't know what's going to happen, right? He could be, maybe he's actually going to do the thing that he's saying he's going to do now. And it's like, you didn't even have a different haircut when he had the same experience of getting up there and lying about this stuff. And so to me that, it speaks to, you know, a broader cultural problem than any of this. I'm, you know, and I'm here for any arguments about how out of touch or embarrassing, you know, the National Democratic Party and its campaign, you know, apparatus are. Like, they do suck. There's no reason to pretend they don't.
Right.
And yet at the same time, like, I don't know if people are voting for Donald Trump because they think that he's the pro-choice candidate in a race or something like that. Then, like, I don't know what you do there. Like, if you just see this weird old bigot on TV doing a strange dance, and you're like, I think that that guy supports the working class.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Then what are you going to do? How do you argue with it?
I feel like a lot of the people are never saw the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving special because Trump is Lucy, and they're all Charlie, just waiting to kick that football. Because this time it's going to stay on the ground.
God, it's really bizarre to me, too. Because it's like, of all the guys that it could be, you know, so this is the real kind of embarrassing bit of wish casting there. I think that a lot of it is that he still kind of codes as an outsider because he's such an oaf, because he's not polished, because he can't talk good. That all of that somehow gets rounded up into the idea that therefore he is authentic or that he's different and he's going to do different things. And, you know, I wanted to believe, I was a big, you know, Bernie Sanders guy. I still admire him very much, but, you know, I wanted to believe that the appeal that he had, which I think was very real in 2016 and 2020, I mean, it's not the best run campaigns. And he did wind up getting aced out by the, you know, DNC in both of those. That's what they do. You know, like, yeah. You can't even really fault them for it. He surely knew that that's what he was up against. I wanted to believe that that appeal was down to people being ready to think with a little bit more solidarity about solving the political problems we have. And now I wonder if it wasn't just that he also seemed like a guy who wasn't a politician because of the fact that he was, like, you know, a little frazzled, had an accent, kind of talked in a different, you know, sort of register than people. And so maybe it didn't really matter. I mean, I think for me, the bit that I've been trying to kind of get past, you know, it's sort of like almost as a sort of a mourning thing. You know, in 2020, one of Sanders' big lines was, are you willing to fight for somebody that you don't know? And I think that that is, in its way, the boldest thing that any politician has said during my lifetime. You know, that this, the idea of having that sort of relationship with other people in the country and with the idea of citizenship, you know, that, like, really saying, are you willing to be in this together to get to what you want? You know, the answer to that is no. Like, people were not willing to do that. I think one way or another, you can't say that this is all, you know, Jim Clyburn getting people together in a room and making it happen. Like, that moment seems to have come and gone, and it makes me really sad because I thought that, you know, it was something worth talking about, at the very least, a question worth asking, I guess you'd say. And I think in this case, you know, I wonder what kind of politics people might actually be open to, what kind of policies they might be open to if the aesthetics were right. And because I think that, you know, it doesn't work for me and I don't understand it necessarily, but clearly there is something in the aesthetic of a rich guy free associating in front of a convention center full of hooting QAnon people that, like, that coded a certain way to people to the point where they were willing to project and able to project something much more hopeful and less embarrassing over it. And, you know, we're going to get some version of the politics that he actually has, not any of the stuff that people imagined onto him. But, you know, I want to believe that it's possible that, you know, if it were to go the other way, like, had we gotten some sort of, like, solidarity-based social democracy in there simply because a guy that looked like an old weirdo from Brooklyn was yelling about it. I don't know. I want to believe that that's possible, but not for a little while, probably.
Yeah, it will be interesting. Historians already figuring out how to write about all this 20 years down the road. Well, David, again, we're headed to podcast land and maybe more, but definitely doing that. So we look forward to talking with you and doing that in the unrestricted world of online communication.
Finally, I'm going to be able to say what I really think about Donald Trump.
We look forward to all of that.
I look forward to it very much, guys.
But thank you so much for everything. Of the 600-700 visits through the years, they've all been great. You're top of our list. So thanks so much for everything, and we'll be reaching out in a few weeks.
I'll look forward to it. Thanks, guys. Congratulations again on an amazing run.
Thanks, David. David Roth, defector, co-host of the Distraction Podcast.